You're in my chair, I pointed out to Lee.
Technically, it's my chair, he returned.
This was true, too. Fine. He wanted to play it that way. I picked up my bag, mumbling. I've been meaning to take some time off.
Shirlene, you can have your chair back when you tell us how it went last night, Lee stalled me.
Who says I want my chair back? I asked.
Maybe I want to call Daisy and have some brunch before we go shopping.
Daisy's at work at Allie's office. And anyway, I know you're not talking to her since she called you last night 10 times and you didn't answer her either, Lee retorted. The girls bought themselves Shirlene's patented silent treatment for a whole week for their shenanigans, I shot back.
Suddenly, Lee's expression shifted. And I'd become accustomed to a lot from these men. Their hotness, their sweetness with their women,
their occasional scariness when they got pissed or on edge.
Even so, I took a mini-step back at the look that hit his face, and the tone of his voice I'd never heard in my life, and I'd known Lee since he was a teenager.
You didn't have a good time?
We're going to a movie tomorrow night.
Lee relaxed.
So you had a good time,
Nace growled. I drew in a big breath and let it out on a sigh.
Yeah, I told Mace. He's nice.
He's handsome. He didn't blink at me ordering a 4-course meal at an expensive restaurant, and he was right there with me. So we're gonna take in a movie tomorrow. I then glared at Mace.
Happy?
Broody Mace left the building and he smiled at me.
Yeah.
I turned back to Lee. Now will you get out of my chair? I got invoices to send.
Or not.
I was feeling the need to have a new outfit for movie night. An outfit I could order online and pick up at Nordstrom on the way home.
So it's all good, Lee noted, straightening his long body out of my chair.
The date was all good, I corrected. You men and your women interfering with my life and setting me up like that was all bad.
Can't be bad if you had a good time, Vance pointed out.
I positioned myself in front of the chair Lee had vacated and skewered him with my eyes.
And what if it had been a disaster? I asked.
We would have killed him,
Vance answered casually. This might have been sweet or funny if it wasn't possibly true.
You're officially not allowed to kill or maim or otherwise torture Moses Richardson, even if things don't work out with us, I decreed.
So you had a good time, Hector remarked,
having risen from the couch to stand between Mace and Vance in front of my desk. He was grinning. I looked among the testosterone brigade.
You're all pretty pleased with yourselves, aren't you?
Pretty much, Luke rumbled.
His lips had formed a half-grin. Okay, they got what they wanted from their interrogation. It was time for me to shop. So even as I sat my ass down, I had a hand up, shooing them.
Fine, now get. This conversation is at an end.
As I spoke, my purse rang. I reached in, took out my cell, saw the number was local but not programmed in. As much as I wanted to ignore it because in all likelihood it was someone trying to sell me something, I couldn't. Local could mean a local marketing call. It could also mean I forgot I scheduled the boys in for their dental cleaning and the dentist office was calling to remind me, which would be good, since if that was the case, I'd forgotten. Mental note, put dentist appointments and planner second mental note by dental appointment stickers. Or the school was calling about something, or Rome's girlfriend's father was calling to schedule an inter-family meeting to discuss the variety of reasons why chicken and waffles were never happening again. So I took the call.
You got Shirlene, I said into my phone.
Morning, baby,
Moses said into my ear. Heat and goosebumps both fought for control of the surface of my skin.
Hey,
I whispered, my eyes dropping to my desk, but that desk, the office, the men, and the world had vanished. Everything had become Moses. He was calling me the morning after a date. No messing about for him, making me wait to hear his voice, pretending he didn't want to connect with me, letting me know right away I was on his mind.
How'd you sleep?
he asked.
Good. I lied. I didn't sleep. I kept reliving that kiss, the sound of his laughter, the sight of his smiles, his words about me being perfect over and over again. It was the best sleepless night in history.
Good, he replied.
So, might be too early for a home date, but I got a slow-cook brisket recipe that'll knock your socks off. I introduce you to that, you introduce me to Tarzan. Work for you?
I loved brisket.
Alternately, the Mayan has a retrospective screening of Set It Off. We can hit the Hornet after, he went on.
Ooh-wee. Latifah, Jada, Vivica, and Kimberly? Oh, no. How was I going to decide between brisket or Latifah?
Too much goodness, my man, I told him. I can't pick.
You know I'm gonna choose you being on my couch, even if I have to watch a white boy swing from a tree.
I burst out laughing, this making me look up, this reminding me I had an audience who had not, I was not surprised to note, shooed.
Damn. I had 5 sets of hot guy eyes on me in varying degrees of amusement and warmth. But it was Lee who approached me. And then it was Lee who bent down and kissed my forehead.
Yes, you read that right. Lee Nightingale bent down and kissed me, Shirlene Jackson's forehead. Hell and damnation. And it was Lee who whispered,
"You're welcome."
When he pulled away, I gave him a death glare. But honestly, my heart wasn't in it. He knew this, and thus gave me Liam Nightingale's patented get-in-your-panties smile. He had no intention of getting in anyone but Indy's panties, and I had no desire for that. Still, it was just the way it came out. I fought fanning myself and continued to push out the glare. He wandered away. His men followed him. Moses called in my ear.
"Shirlene, I lose you."
The men were hanging around my desk annoying me. I had to give them my death glare to get them to move out. And when I have to pull out the death glare, I need to concentrate, I explained. He chuckled. Hearing it, the world suddenly felt right for the first time since Leon Jackson looked across the high school cafeteria at me. I was in trouble. Or I was in heaven. Time would tell which one. Moses brought me back on target.
Tarzan and brisket, or Latifah and popcorn followed by bar food.
Tarzan included his couch, which was a plus and a terrifying minus. Queen Latifah included a dark movie theater, which would mean no chat and a possibly loud bar but definitely other people around, which would mean no meaningful chat. And I wanted to get to know Moses Richardson, and maybe, just maybe, I should get what I wanted for a change.
Brisket, I forced out. That was my choice, sweetheart.
I gotta get back to my kids, but first, tell me how the men are annoying you, he ordered. Do I have to have a talk with Nightingale? I wondered briefly how that would go, and even briefly it was strong enough for me almost to say yes, just to find out.
Maybe we can save you getting in his face for when he does something stupid, like refusing to wear a vest when the mission calls for one, I suggested.
Does he do that? He loves his wife, his family, wants to make his own one day, and isn't a moron, so no.
That got me another chuckle before.
Okay, then. I'll let you handle the men and I'll go handle my kids. I'll text you my address. 6 too early for you.
If he lived anywhere in the Denver metro area, a 6 o'clock date meant I had time to get home and get changed, refresh makeup, and check my fro, and deal with lift or shrink and moisture, depending on where the day took it. And this was fantastic. I could now focus my Nordstrom shopping and not knock him dead with too much fabulousness, but still bring just enough fabulousness, since we were going to be at his house, not out on the town.
6 works, I replied.
Right. Text you and call you tonight.
Call me tonight.
When I didn't say anything, he asked,
You got something on tonight?
Only continuing to phone block all the rock chicks,
and maybe door-block them if they descended en masse at my house, which could happen. In fact, they were probably planning that right now, or ambushing me at the office. No, I answered.
You good with the call? He pressed.
I want
to get to know you, Charlene. We don't gotta talk until James Corden comes on, but phone talk is easier than across the table talk, especially in the beginning.
Boy, he had this date shit down.
Is it? Yeah, baby,
he said, sounding like he was smiling. Prove it to you tonight.
All right.
Good, I replied quietly. I'd like that.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. A pause, then,
sweetheart, I'm sorry, but I gotta go.
Damn. Okay, yes, right, I'll let you go. Another chuckle, then,
talk to you later, Charlene.
You sure will, Moses.
Later, baby.
Later, Moses. That got me another chuckle before he disconnected. I stared at my phone after I took it from my ear, having the strange urge to hold it and what had just been coming from it to my chest. Then I jumped so high I nearly fell out of my chair when I heard,
"So, I don't gotta kill my best friend for setting my aunt up with some asshole of a brother?"
I lifted my eyes to see my nephew and ex-partner in crime, literally, Darius Tucker, standing at my desk looking like he was trying to attempt X-ray vision as he scowled down at me. Boy, the power of Moses Richardson was fierce. Darius could be silent as a cat, but no one got in that room from either door without me knowing. Normally.
"Those boys tell you they set me up?" I asked.
"Nope," he answered.
"Monty told me. Thought it'd be best if shit went south. I was in the know, so if some asshole fucked you over that Lee and the guy set you up with, I only had one reason to murder them. Not two."
"It went okay, son," I said quietly.
"Just okay?"
he asked irritably.
"No, it went real good.
He seems like a decent man, so we're having a movie night tomorrow."
"You ever think Leon was a decent man?"
I pressed my lips together. When Darius's father was murdered, Leon had honed in for the kill, recruiting my nephew to groom him to be his right-hand man, using Darius's grief that manifested as anger to drag him into a life that was not for him, a world he should have never known. And by then, I was so cowed by my husband, I had not saved my nephew from that nightmare. We'd become partners after Leon had been killed. In other words, I hadn't saved my nephew from an ongoing nightmare. "We got things we should hash out, Darius," I said meaningfully.
"No, we don't,"
he returned, as ever, catching his aunt's meaning. I lifted my chin.
"We should have hashed them out ages ago."
He shook his head.
"No need. We were both drowning. Can't save someone when you got two lungs filled with water."
"Son." I shut up when he leaned into a fist on my desk.
"You think you should have saved me? I think I should have saved you. And you know what, Aunt Charlene?"
"What?" I whispered, staring into cold, dark, dead eyes that I hadn't seen looking like that since the bad old days. He'd been redeemed. He'd been reunited with his one true love. He wasn't living the life, but he was finding his way there. With Lee's help, the hot bunch, the rock chicks, Malia, and lastly, his son. He told me the what. I just didn't get it.
"On that, I win."
"Come again?"
"I didn't go home to him. I didn't go home to him busting my lip or blacking my eye. Whatever he did to you that I still feel sick in my gut thinking about when you walked funny and wouldn't look anyone in the eye."
I swallowed. It was good in the bad old days. And now, in the good new ones, Darius was exceptionally observant. Though I was saying it might also have been bad.
"So I should have saved you," he declared.
"If you tried, you would have died."
and that was a result I should have risked if it meant I might have bested it and got you free. Darius. But it didn't happen that way, and here we are.
He pushed off my desk and swung a hand out.
Can't go back. Just gotta move forward.
No, I disagreed, realizing right then how wise Moses' advice was. We gotta be in our nows.
What?
Holding my nephew's gaze, I stood. We gotta be in our nows, son. I met a decent man, and he wants a second date. You got a second chance with Malia and your boy. That's our nows, and they're good. So we gotta be where our feet are, right here, right now. Not back then, where there's nothing good, but it doesn't matter, we can't change a thing. Not in the future, which we don't know what's gonna happen, and we got no control over it anyway. The now, right now, where it's good. I always trusted you. Lord God, I was going to cry. Darius, I always loved you. So going to cry. Son, and the only reason I stayed in was to protect you. That shut my mouth. And I don't regret it, he finished. The only reason I stayed in was to protect you, I shared.
The vicious cycle, he muttered.
I regret that. The fact you stayed in for me. The fact I stayed in to protect you instead of getting you out. Hell, I regret all of it, I whispered.
That's not in the now, he pointed out.
It isn't. You're right, I replied. But it's still true. We stood there, staring at each other. Two sinners. He'd been redeemed, but I was so destroyed by the experience I needed to be reborn.
Be happy, Darius whispered.
I'm trying.
And I'm glad.
With that, as was his way, Darius ended it without another word, moving to the door to the inner sanctum. He stopped at it and turned my way in order to give me another word.
Wished I'd killed him myself, what he did to you.
I shook my head. Don't matter, son. Bottom line, he's dead, and it's good it wasn't at your hand.
I still wished it was.
I got that. I felt that. Sometimes in my darker hours, I thought the same thing. So I nodded. My nephew didn't nod back. He punched in the code to buzz open the door and he walked through. I stood there watching as the door closed him from sight. My worst mistake. Shit. It was time to go shopping. I sat, booted up my computer, and virtually went to my happy place. In other words, I hit Nordstrom.
Okay, lay it on me. What's on your mind?
It was that evening, and we were having a phone conversation, me and Moses. The boys were at the NI offices, not pulling a shift, but working out with Mace in the down room. They'd be home soon, and they'd be hungry. Which was why I had the hamburger patties already formed, the deep fat fryer out ready to be plugged in to prep for the crinkle cuts, and the tomatoes sliced, the lettuce leaves cleaned, in hopes they'd get some vegetables by dressing their hamburgers with them. I was hiding in my bedroom because Moses had called, and when the boys had caught him checking me out at the grocery store, they hadn't liked that much. They also both gave the roses dirty looks, but I just pretended I bought them myself. So now I was worried about them coming home to catch me on the phone with him, putting the one of the roses together with the one of me hiding in my room talking on the phone and getting Moses. But this was only part of the heavy weighing on my mind. Heavy, it was weird that through the miracle of wireless communication, Moses had caught. I'm not sure I want to talk about it, I told Moses.
This is the beauty of early dating phone conversation. You can talk to me, pretending I'm one of your girls.
He seemed sage about this beginning to date shit, but even I hadn't been out of the game long enough to know that was seriously not right. My man, ain't no way I can pretend you're one of my girls.
I know, but I had to give it a shot, because I want to know what's on your mind.
You had to hand it to the brother. He didn't beat around the bush.
My nephew Darius and me had a convo this morning, and I couldn't finish because I didn't know what to say.
It just what, sweetheart?
He pressed gently. We never talked about some things we probably should have talked about a long time ago.
And you talked about those things this morning.
As much as Darius would let me, I shared. He isn't a big get-your-feelings-out-there-and-process kind of brother.
Just in case you haven't figured this out yet, there aren't many brothers who are that kind of brother,
Moses pointed out. I knew that was the truth.
Though I got no problem with that shit,
he added. Fantastic.
I know you aren't cool with it, but did he seem cool with it when you got done talking?
He asked. We both got regrets.
Everyone has regrets.
I heard that. It was just that some were more extreme. We both got guilt.
Charlene.
I cut him off. I know you're gonna say be in the now, but that's my boy, and I fucked him up. He was Roman Sniff's age when it happened, and now I got a second chance. And what if I fuck that up?
You and your nephew are both on the righteous path, and those two boys you got under your roof, Charlene. You know, if their path was going to be different, they would have gone down it by now, and they'd be in a different place. Not manning the control room at Nightingale Investigations, or going grocery shopping with their mama. They'd be dealers, rent boys, or dead.
I had nothing to say to that, mostly because it was true. And it gave me the shivers just to think about it. Moses, however, still had shit to say.
You say you fucked one up. But he's still standing, and he made it to the other side. And he did that with you. But straight up, you saved too. So I think your record's pretty fucking good, baby. Think on that.
I would. I'd think on that. Because I liked the way he saw it, and I hadn't seen it that way. They don't know about you yet, I blurted. The smile came through when he replied,
I didn't figure you shared about your ambush date over cream of wheat this morning.
He could give it straight. I needed to do that, too. I'm not sure they're gonna be super hip on you.
They've had you to themselves for a while, Charlene, but neither of those two struck me as mom's boys, and they might be protective in the beginning. But if this works, I'll win them over in the end.
I don't think I'm gonna say anything for, you know, a little while. Just, you know, to see. No reason for any drama if there's a... eventually no reason for that drama.
I'm doing the same thing.
I nodded. Wise.
When the time comes, though, the girls are gonna love you.
I was not thinking about this. This was not in my now. I had enough scary shit in my now. I didn't need to add to it.
Mm-hmm, I mumbled.
He chuckled. I like your laugh, I whispered.
I like yours too, sweetheart,
he whispered back.
Need to get you to a place where I hear it more often.
I laugh a lot.
Not around me.
That's because you're scary as hell.
That's the place we gotta get you around to get to the right place.
I tipped my head to the side. You got this shit down. How many women have you dated since your divorce?
I didn't keep track.
Is that another way of saying you lost count? He chuckled again, but did it as he said, no. This is not an answer to my question, Moses.
I haven't been celibate, but I'm not a player. Promise that, Charlene. That answer work for you?
I suppose, I mumbled.
No offense, just getting it out there, but you haven't hidden you're out of practice.
Fabulous, he kept going.
So we'll take this at your pace, baby. Just as long as we're moving forward, for as long as that works for both of us, I don't care how slow we go.
You know the scariest part about you, Moses? I asked.
Hit me with it, Charlene.
You seem too good to be true. There was a weighty pause before.
I'm human. I'm gonna fuck up, tick you off, annoy the hell out of you. I'm not giving you the good stuff and hiding the bad to get in there. This, where this is at right now,
I'm taking as indication that we got something good to work with. Normally the red flags fly right off. That said, there'll come a day when you won't feel that. I just hope that day you still feel this foundation we're building and want to use it to work whatever it is through. I can be a bit much, too, I admit it. Another smile in his voice.
Yeah, and how's that?
I can be stubborn. That didn't get me a chuckle. He out and out laughed. You find that funny? I asked.
Baby, you refused to call me, but wanted to, so your boss set us up on a date. But I got the stubborn thing even before that happened.
Well then. I sometimes talk about myself in third person. Moses was silent. It's my thing, I went on.
And?
He asked after I shut up. Some people find that weird.
So?
I grinned. Charlene's happy you don't find that weird. He started laughing again. My phone sounded in my hand, telling me I had another call, just as I heard shouted by Sniff, Charlene, we're home! See? Told you that's how it went down.
I'm plugging in the deep fat fryer,
he continued. And see? Told you they'd come home hungry. I took the phone away from my ear, saw it said Daisy calling, ignored it, and put the phone back to my ear, saying, hold on a sec. Then I took it from my ear again.
I'll be out in a minute,
I shouted.
Awesome,
Sniff shouted back. I put the phone to my ear again. The boys are home.
That was my guess.
I smiled again. Then I frowned. Means I should let you go, I said. They were working out with Mace. I gotta get the burgers going.
Then I'll let you go, baby, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Okay, Moses.
Do you want me to fire up the grill?
Rome yelled. I put my hand over the phone and yelled back,
if you want a grill, won't stop you, but I was gonna fry. Grill, Sniff bellowed. I'll fire it up, Rome shouted. Great, I yelled.
I took my hand off the phone and heard Moses chuckling again. Sorry, that was rude, I mumbled.
Yep, ain't nothing foster about that, sweetheart. Sounds just like a family to me. Now I'm letting you go. See you tomorrow at my place. 6.
Okay, Moses. See you then.
Bye, baby.
Bye, Moses. He disconnected mid-chuckle again. I took my phone from my ear and engaged text. I then texted Daisy, Rock Chick Freeze-Out still in operation. I'll tell you about the date and the movie we're watching tomorrow night later. That get her. Her big-haired head would explode knowing we already had a second date planned before she knew one thing about the first. I got up from my bed and padded in my dress from the office that day, but with my slippers on my feet to the door. I opened it, went through, and walked down the hall toward the open-plan kitchen that was in the middle of the great room. During this walk, my phone sounded with a text. Daisy. You know it don't work that way, sugar. An extra freeze-out day for every text, I replied. Those three dots that said she was typing didn't even form. Daisy Sloan knew when I meant business. Spread the word to the chicklets, I ordered. I sent that off and hit the kitchen to see Sniff shoving Doritos in his face. Shouldn't you be eating a banana? I asked.
Maybe,
he answered. I put a hand on my hip. You missed this, but every time I say that, that's my way of saying put the junk down and eat a banana. He grinned at me, teeth filled with Dorito goo, which he knew worked my last nerve. Then he kept eating Doritos. I could have no idea if this was universal teenage boy or his last hold on rebelling against authority. My boys were good boys. Even in the beginning, they did what they were told. That had never been a battle. Of course, at the time, Sniff was with me first since Rome was in the hospital recovering from a gunshot wound. Then Rome was home, with me all over his ass to make sure he recovered from that gunshot wound.
And then, I figured they were so happy to have three squares, a roof over their head, and their precious jewel still alive, they didn't bust my chops, but instead followed my rules and did as told. Rome didn't openly rebel. Rome was more man than most grown men I'd known by the time I got him at 15. Definitely now. He did his chores with no back talk, and now he did them without me even asking. Ditto with his schoolwork. He didn't mouth off, and he was smart enough not to let me catch him eating Doritos when he knew I'd want him to eat a banana. Sniff mostly did the same, except in times like this. I'd always wondered about times like this, but I'd never asked. Now I asked, "Are you just being a teenage boy, or are you rebelling against authority?" "Isn't that one and the same?" he asked back. I added one more choice. "Or is it that you're just a smartass?" "The last one," Rome answered for Sniff, coming in from outside where he'd been firing up the grill. He already had the spatula in his hand, even if no meat was over the heat. My boy was on a mission. I stared at him as he sauntered into the kitchen, all long legs, loose hips, 18 and entirely in control of his own body, and so handsome. Lord, he was beautiful. I looked at Sniff. He'd put away the Doritos, but now his hand was on the side of the deep fryer, checking the temperature, even though the light went off to tell us when it was ready, and that light was still on. He got all A's, didn't even try, studied, but didn't like it much, so did the least he could. I wondered what he'd do if he'd try. I wondered if he'd be a doctor, or an engineer, or an architect. But I knew in my bones whatever he wanted, he'd be able to do it. Rome got A's too, but some B's. He was a reader. He got math and science stuff that was way beyond me. But he had no patience for writing. English comp irritated the hell out of him, and if he had a report to write, lordy, watch out, that put my boy in a mood. But they were so much more than good-looking, so much more than sharp. Smart. They were funny. They were loyal. They were mine. Right then, in my kitchen, it was not the first time I wondered about their parents, even if I knew the greatest penance they could endure was never knowing the men they'd made, never knowing how beautiful those two boys turned out, never knowing the goodness they put on this earth, and worst of all, not caring. But that was what I was thinking right then in my kitchen. Somehow, some way, I got the chance to know all that, feed it, nurture it, hold it in my heart. "Sniff," I whispered. "Yeah, Shirlene?" he answered the deep fat fryer. "I love you, boy." His body shot straight and turned to me. I felt the air in the room go electric. I also felt Rome's attention hone in on me, so I looked to him, right in the eye. "I love you too, Rome. You're the best thing to ever happen to me in my entire life." I included Sniff in my look. "Both you boys. Blessings. I can count my blessings on two fingers, but they're the best ones I could have ever got."
"You okay, Shirlene?" Rome asked quietly.
"You're in my kitchen, son, and so's your brother, so yeah. I'm the best I've ever been," I replied. Sniff looked to Rome. Rome didn't take his eyes off me. Sniff stopped looking at Rome and moved my way, muttering, "Gonna hit the shower real quick before dinner." But as he was about to walk by me, he leaned in and down and kissed my cheek. Then he hit the stairs to the basement, where both the boys had their big TV room and bedrooms. Rome just went to the fridge, got the platter of burger patties, closed the fridge, and walked right by me to the doors to the outside. He stopped inside them after he'd opened one, and he turned to me.
"You know we love you too, yeah?"
he asked. I clenched my teeth together real hard and nodded.
"Yeah,"
he said, and walked out the door, sliding it closed behind him. I watched through the windows as he moved to the grill, plate of burgers in one hand, grill spatula in the other. I wasn't sure I'd saved them.
Jules was on a mission to do that before I came into the picture. But I had a hand in that. A good strong hand. God gave me that shot. So maybe he hadn't given up on me. Maybe he believed in me enough to give me a second chance. And then, when I refused to let him down, upon me he bestowed his blessings. Chapter 6 Wonders, Shirlene. The next night, as the Uber came to a stop at the curb in front of the walk-up to Moses' front door, I checked out his place. Newish build, 3 stories, attached on both sides to other units. Since we drove by the alley that ran behind his place, I knew the bottom floor was the garage, so the top 2 floors had to be the living area. The trees around the development had not filled in yet. Still, it was nice. Neat. Attractive. And Moses had some big pots on his front porch, already filled with flowers. I started up the walk as the Uber driver took off and Moses' front door opened. He leaned against the jamb. Okay, changed my mind. His house was the bomb. His eyes weren't on me. They were watching the Uber take off. Hey, I called. His gaze slowly came to me. Hey. He didn't move from his door as I took the 2 steps up his stoop, off of which was his cute little porch with its flower pots, which also had 2 red Adirondack chairs on it with a table in between. Seeing as he was in my way and not moving, I stopped. Something wrong with your car? He asked. I hope not, since Rome's out on a date in it. Something wrong with your phone? I was confused, but I answered, no. So is there some reason you didn't use it to phone and ask me to pick you up? Ah. It's all good, my man, I assured. I'm an Uber expert. Sniff at home? He asked, not moving from barring me from his house. No, he's out with some buds, I answered. So it isn't that you didn't want him to catch me picking you up? Hmm. Moses. Okay, before we start this date, since I got your undivided attention, I'll share something important. You've been an independent woman a long time, looking out for yourself, looking out for your boys. I get that's habit, and I'll point out I find it attractive. But we do this. It works with you and me. You will no longer be alone. You'll have someone to help look out for you. Granted, you'll have someone else to look out for, but he'll be returning that favor. To end, if you need a ride, you call. If I was a normal rock chick, say, any one of them but Daisy, I would lose my mind at him barring the door to deliver this statement, a statement not even vaguely disguised as a command. I'd then stomp off and call my girls to meet me at a bar so I could throw a hissy fit. I was not a normal rock chick. I was me. So I said, okay. Okay, baby, he whispered, then moved aside so I could enter his house. I walked in, deciding not to hide. I was interested in what I was seeing. Up front, carpeted stairs that were nice. To the right, a door that opened to what was clearly a laundry/storage room, what with the telltale signs of washer and dryer and bikes mounted on the wall. I headed up the steps. There was a landing where things got interesting, this being a little alcove cut out of the pearly white wall. There was an African tribal mask on a stand set there, lit from above. It was beat up a little, but painstakingly painted, and still had all the little shells that ran across the top. Nice, I noted, stopping to look at it. Mgari Mwash, mask for a woman from the Congo. I looked up at him. No kidding. My uncle was a collector of African art. On our 21st birthdays, he gave all his kids and nieces and nephews a piece. He tipped his head to the mask. That was mine. I looked down at it. It's amazing. Yep. I should do something like that for Rome, I murmured. Yep. I looked at him again to see he was grinning at me. He then put his hand to the small of my back and propelled me up the next flight of stairs. More nice. Wood floors, a living room to the left, big. A kitchen to the right, also big, off which there was a bar, and beyond that a dining room table. Balconies off the front and back. I didn't know what was behind it, but between living room and kitchen there was a big pantry. The doors were open, and inside it was a work of art.
"Don't get ideas,"
Moses said as I stared at it. The distressed wood countertop that had been installed into it, the drawers under it with interesting handles, the cabinets under the drawers that had dense wire mesh as fronts, the shelves above it, a display of pantry-type items in baskets, jars, and glass canisters as well as cans on recessed baby shelves. All of it could be photographed for a magazine.
I let my oldest loose on that. I made it, she designed it. And after her week is up with her mom, she comes back and straightens it when I fuck everything up.
I again turned my gaze to him.
She's got an eye. She wants to be an interior designer, and the rest of the house will reflect her desire to do that.
I smiled at him. He took that opportunity to lean in and touch his lips to mine.
Ooh-wee.
When he pulled back, I tried to keep breathing right as I remarked. It's sweet you let her loose.
Let her loose as much as I can. She's got an eye, a talent, and will need clients who do not have the limited budget her old dad has. Fortunately, she looks at it as a challenge.
His gaze roamed my face before he looked back into my eyes and asked,
"You hungry?"
I nodded. Hand to my waist, he propelled me into his kitchen, saying,
"Let's get you fed."
Interesting punched tin backsplash above the stove, gray concrete countertops, stainless steel appliances. His girl took into account her dad was a guy in everything but the stained glass suncatcher hanging in the window shaped like a sunflower.
"You want to sit in front of the TV and eat, or you want to eat at the bar and talk first?"
Moses asked, getting down plates. "Bar," I answered. "Can I help?"
"Next time, yeah. This time, let me look after you. Have a seat at the bar, baby. Wine to drink, or beer?"
"Wine's good," I told him, heading around to the wooden stools on the other side of the bar. He got down a wine glass as I hefted my ass up on a stool.
"Red or white?"
he asked. "You got both?" I was surprised. He drank beer all through dinner at Barolo Grill. He looked to me.
"You were coming over, so yeah, I got both."
I didn't know what to say to that, because I didn't know what to think. Leon had put some effort into it in the beginning, but not much. I was too young. I didn't know to expect more, expect better. And by the end, I suspected even in the beginning, he had no clue how to give more. Definitely not better. I'd never had a man serve up a meal to me, unless I was paying him as a waiter at a restaurant, or buy me wine. "Red," I said softly. His head tipped to the side, and his attention became acute.
"You good?"
I had kind, decent, loving friends. I had a job I was proud of. I had two boys under my roof I wasn't quite done raising, and I didn't get to them until late, but what I'd done right. And I was on a stool in Moses Richardson's kitchen. What I was not was good. There was no definition for the wonder I was feeling. "Yeah," I replied. He studied me a beat, nodded, then moved to a bottle of red wine on his counter. Moses was opening it when he asked,
"There's a reason why the boys don't have their own cars."
"I made a mistake." He pulled out the cork, but didn't move to fill my glass, just looked at me. I took that to mean, explain. I explained. In the beginning, I wanted them to trust me, but I was stuck. They'd been getting on their own for a while. They didn't need me to feed them and give them a bed. Still, beds and food at my place were better than what they could scrounge up. Their clothes were for shit, secondhand, got them at the shelter. They had phones, and I did not ask how they got them or how they paid for them, but they weren't top of the line. When I paused, Moses nodded to tell me he was with me, so I kept going. Could have gone the route of giving them everything they needed and most of what they wanted, but I didn't think spoiling them was the way to make them trust me and the home I was giving them. Bought them enough. They had knew of what they needed. Got them good phones, and I paid for the plan, but that was it. Otherwise, I gave them chores so they'd get allowances and have money in their pockets to buy themselves things. I didn't want to just hand everything over so they didn't learn how to work for something they wanted. It was more, though. I wanted it normal. I wanted to teach things and for them not to expect things. But I also wanted them to know I wasn't buying them or their behavior or my place in their hearts. "Think that was a smart move, sweetheart," Moses said, now pouring my wine. "Yeah. The problem with it was they never asked for anything. Not once. Not new jeans. Not new phones. Not new undies. Not a thing. Christmas is crisis time for Shirlane. Got no clue what they want or need." I shook my head. But anyway, got it in my head, cars were too big a deal for them. Especially two boys who'd had nothing until they got me. They'd definitely never ask. I couldn't just hand them over, 'cause what am I teaching them if I did? So I decided any time they wanted the Navigator, I'd give it to them. And told them they both graduated high school on the honor roll, they could pick their own cars. That way they'd earn them. But I didn't realize I'd be putting myself on the Uber VIP list for frequent riders by doing all of that. Moses set my wine glass in front of me. "Since they're graduating soon, you won't have to worry about it much longer. Unless they're not on the honor roll." "They're on the honor roll," I shared, lifting the glass and taking a sip. Nice, dry, but fruity, with a hint of oak. The man could pick wine. Maybe he was perfect. "Two street kids graduating on the honor roll," he murmured, pulling a bag of big sesame seed buns his way. "You're like a miracle worker." "They're smart kids. They don't even try, it just happens," I told him. He turned his eyes to me. "They gotta go to class. They gotta pay attention in class. They gotta hand in assignments, which means they gotta do homework, and they gotta pass tests, which means they gotta study at least a little bit. So no, Shirlene, that shit doesn't just happen. Kids do that because they're either taught to do it, because they've lived lives with parents that help them learn to live those lives right, or because they respect the person who's looking after them, and they don't want to let her down. "I hear that, honey," I said softly, and watched his eyes flare. I didn't get the flare, but I kept on the current subject. "What I'm saying is they're good kids, smart kids, and that's just how they are, natural-like. I didn't make that in them. That's who they are. So I don't think I should get credit for that. I think they have to understand who they are, and it's good down deep, so they don't ever get it into their heads that what made them is what is them, because it's not. They're their own people, and they built that through hard work and just being good." He pulled the top off a crock pot, after which zesty, saucy goodness wafted into the room. Doing this, saying, "This is because you're humble." Rome took a bullet for Jules. He stopped spooning brisket on the bottom of a bun and turned to me. "And one of the reasons Rome and Jules didn't die on the floor of that living room is because Sniff was running flat out. He'd lost his phone, so he was flagging down anyone who would stop, looking for help. Just God's love that that car he flagged down had Luke Stark in it." "Sweetheart," he whispered. "What made them is there, natural-like," I said firmly. "Okay, baby," he agreed quietly. Since we had that straight, I took a sip of wine. He dished up, and when he slid my plate in front of me, it did not have a sandwich and some chips on it. It had a sandwich, potato salad, a mound of spinach salad with bacon, blue cheese crumbles, and red onions sliced so thin you could see through it. And thank God I had mints in my bag for that.
and baked beans he pulled out of the oven in a crock he had to have gotten from his mama. "You want to feed me or make me explode?" I asked as I stared down at my plate.
"My mama taught me, worst thing a guest could do after they sit at your table is want for more and not be able to get it. She never laid a table where each serving dish wasn't filled to the brim with more in the kitchen."
"And you took that one giant leap further and put so much on a plate a woman can't get through it." He slid his ass up on the stool beside mine and grinned at me.
"You complaining?"
I pointed a fork at my plate. "Is there molasses in these beans?"
"Brown sugar. I came home at lunch and started them up. They've been cooking for 5 hours.
"Nice. No, I'm absolutely not complaining," I belatedly answered. He leaned into me and gave me another lip touch, which was good pre-blue cheese and onions, before he turned to his own food. He was scooping up some potato salad mix with beans, I approved, when I called, "Moses." He turned his head my way. No man has ever come home at lunch to make up some beans for me. Warmth, or more accurately, more warmth, seeped into his eyes.
"Hate you had to wait this long, but still honored to be the first."
"Stop being perfect," I whispered.
"Gonna stretch that out, Charlene, as long as I can."
It was then I leaned in and gave Moses a lip touch. I didn't look at his face as I sat back and turned to my food. The beans were sublime. The brisket was orgasmic. But it was the company that altered my world. I would find, around about the time all was well in the world of Tarzan and Jane, that making out on the couch like teenagers, hot and heavy, was a skill that stood the test of time, even if you didn't practice it. And I would find, to my horror, that post-traumatic stress was not just for soldiers. This, I would find, when Moses was deftly sliding into second base, hand inching toward my breast. I wanted him to tag that bag more than I wanted my next breath. And then my mind blanked. Sheer panic saturated every cell in my body, and somehow I was off my back on the couch with Moses's long length on top of me. Instead, I was across the room, breathing hard, hand up his way like I was fending him off, even as he lay on his side on the couch, up on a forearm. His breathing also accelerated, his eyes alert and locked on me.
"Baby?"
he whispered cautiously. I still felt the tingle in my lady parts, the taste of him in my mouth, the feel of his heat against my skin, the weight of him on my body. I could see his beauty right there on his couch. But my brain was twisting shit up, feelings I was feeling making him grow foggy. I wasn't having visions, seeing Leon's ghostly face hovering over the magnificence that was Moses. It was all in the emotions, as things I hadn't felt in years started stomping through the dust in my bones, kicking it up, making me not able to see straight.
"Charlene,"
Moses called, slowly moving his body so he was seated on the couch before, equally slowly, straightening from it. Okay. All right. This was movie night with Moses. This was brisket and baked beans and lip touches and smiles and good wine, while he told me about his oldest, Judith, named after his mama, spending an entire summer in search of the perfect lamps for his nightstands. She had this mission because, after he'd recovered from the financial strain of the divorce and the ensuing legal battles, 3 years ago he'd moved his daughters into this place and had given his eldest a budget to do her dad's pad upright. And even at 14, she apparently took this task seriously. He also told how he was struggling with what it said about him, that he had a problem with her latest boyfriend, who was white, when I never saw my girl with anything but a brother. And he shared about his youngest, Alice, named after her mama's favorite writer, Alice Walker, and how she was a good kid, a great one. But she'd arranged 3 sit-ins that year on a variety of things that she wanted changed about the school, and
"She just cares about things so much, baby. She wants change yesterday.
doesn't understand she can't have it. And I'm worried of what the world is gonna do to my little girl when she realizes it's never gonna be easy. It's always gonna be hard, and sometimes impossible. In other words, dinner was not light. It was heavy, and it was the sweetest conversation I'd had, because he trusted me with these things about his girls, about his feelings about his girls, and that was an honor the likes I'd never had bestowed on me. Tarzan, as fantastic as it was a letdown after that. But we needed light after all that heavy, and it was good to cuddle through a movie with a man, hear his beautiful chuckle, feel his arms around me, smell his scent, be in his space. And kissing after the movie was over was a revelation. I couldn't say it started out easy. I was stiff. The ease came later as Moses led me to it, and he made it good before it got good. Now I was there, across the room, facing off with a decent, kind, deep-feeling man who could cook brisket and pick wine, while the dust of the one from before drifted up in my bones, blinding me and making my mouth feel dry. "Talk to me," he urged. I stuttered, then shook my head. "This isn't gonna work." "She cheated on me." I blinked at him when those words came at me. "Sorry?" I asked. "At her high school reunion, with a high school boyfriend, she got drunk off her ass and cheated on me." He was talking about his wife. Had to be. And was she insane? I'd only had his kisses, and they were fabulous, but I'd also had a good amount of what else made him. So she had to be insane. He cut me off. "Kept talking to him on the phone after. Believe her when she says it didn't go further than the reunion physically. But she kept contact, even after I found out and we got into counseling. She ended it with him only while we were in counseling. But I heard her talking to him, telling him to quit calling, and when I confronted her with it, she admitted she kept that up for a while, needed it somehow. But it was over. He just wouldn't quit calling." "I'm sorry, Moses." He nodded his head sharply, only once. "I am too. I loved her. And I gotta take responsibility for my fuck-up, because I perpetrated one. I was a man and acted like a dumb shit man. We had babies and I helped her make them, and then I did my thing, went to work, went to the gym, might go to the grocery store, but other than that, pretty much expected her to do everything. Feed him, bathe him, get him to bed, take care of the house. I spent time with my babies, of course. They were my babies. I'd do the odd thing here or there to pitch in, but mostly I took the good times. Not the waking up in the middle of the night times. The tough stuff. I was gone, mostly at work. Could say I needed the overtime. I worked hard. And everyone can use more money, but the truth was I loved my job, so it wasn't that. I was just doing whatever I wanted to do. She had a job, too. Two of them. One being a mama, one in an office. She was worn out. She was also fed up with it."
I don't know, but I think that wouldn't be much fun," I murmured.
"Thing was, she didn't say dick about it. Not until counseling. So I saw the error of my ways after the fact. And I was good to hold up my hand and cop to it. Even could see just a little, not totally, but enough to maybe forgive her for having a weak moment, getting hammered and thinking, what if? What if I had worked out with that guy back in high school? What would her life be like if she wasn't raising two girls mostly on her own with her husband MIA at work? I could also see wanting to go back in time when it was simpler. When there wasn't the house, the husband, the kids, the job. When it was just dressing up, going out, booze and fucking and good times." I nodded. I wasn't sure I agreed with him. That was a leap to take, and said a lot about him that he tried to find a way to forgive a disloyalty of that magnitude, that he tried to understand what lay beneath it. But it wasn't my experience, my marriage, my spouse, so it wasn't my call to make. For my part, Leon cheated on me